This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
And the points don't matter.
That was a very original joke, Gabriel.
Thank you. You know,
it's so funny.
It wasn't scripted. I made
you
it up
on the,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, did we just get proved?
Bojack Horseman reference.
I'm Zach Valenti.
I'm Gabriel Urbina.
I'm Sarah Shackett, and I'm resigning from the show.
Right. Welcome to the new Zach and Gabriel Hour. Oh, you poor people.
No, I actually have a very bad idea that I found on the internet. And the way that this game works is I'm going to present it to the two of you, and then you will have just 30 minutes to turn it into the pitch for a good movie, book, TV show, whatever strikes your fancy. Go. Story.
Yeah, and the way that this usually goes, Sarah is going to get ample revenge for my Whose Line Is It Anyway joke by whatever idea she inflicts upon us.
Oh, you will have fun with this one. Because this one comes from our friends at the BBC.
Oh.
And I will link, or there will be a link to this article in the show notes, so you can take a look if you like. I think this is going to be fun.
Well, before you read the headline, let me take a large sip of
yes,
tea.
As is customary.
As is my want.
Yes, indeed. The headline of this piece is fairly tame by No Bad Ideas standards. Stolen Bruegel masterpiece was switched with fake in police sting. Police in Italy are unconcerned. I like the subheader much better. Police in Italy are unconcerned about the daring theft of a Flemish master's painting. Because
oh
they had
God.
Replaced it with a fake a month ago.
Oh, wow. The Italian police not fucking around.
Right.
Holy shit.
The painting by Peter, I apologize for mispronouncing this name, Peter Bruegel the Younger, worth millions, apparently vanished from a church on Wednesday. Thieves used a hammer to smash open its display case and made off in a car. Hours later, Italian police revealed that they had heard rumors of the planned heist and installed cameras to catch the thieves in the act.
One step ahead!
The painting of the crucifixion had been replaced with a copy, and the original kept
wow.
safe and sound. They said this all happened in the town of Castelnuovo Magra in Liguria, where the painting of the crucifixion is kept in a side alcove of the Santa Maria Maddalena Church. The surveillance footage of the raid is now being carefully studied, and investigators are chasing down those responsible. Earlier, before the switch was revealed, Mayor Daniele Montebello told Italy's ANSA news agency that the painting was, quote, a work of inestimable value, a hard blow for our community, end quote. On Wednesday
oh
night,
God.
He revealed that he
wow.
had been in on the ruse, explaining
wow.
that, quote, today, for investigative reasons, we could not reveal anything, end quote. He also thanked members of the church for holding their peace, quote, because some faithful had noticed that the one on display was not the original, but they
whoa.
Did not reveal the secret.
Oh, man!
Quote, Peter Bruegel the Younger was the son of another Flemish artist, Peter Bruegel the Elder, and is famous both for his own paintings and for copies he made of his father's work. The crucifixion is a well-known piece, of which several copies exist with small differences between
so
them.
So the son of the artist was the one who did the replication?
His painting, but he did his own work and also copies of his father's stuff. Several copies exist with small differences between them, including one in the Museum of Fine Arts in Budapest, Hungary. Thank you, BBC. All are believed to be variations, there you are, of an original by Bruegel the Elder, but no original by his hand is known to have survived.
But Bruegel is a, like, he's been dead for a
long
time.
Oh, yeah, no, no, no. 17th century Dutch painter.
So. Right, so start the clock, and we're going to get straight on this.
Okay. Hold on.
But yeah, but like...
First of all, thank you for this story.
Yeah,
this
you're welcome. Crazy. Hold on. All right, starting the timer. You want to take another sip of your tea?
No. Let's go.
Starting the timer now.
Yeah, but like, there's no bad idea here except for trying to steal it. This is just a series of very good ideas.
Thieves made a terrible decision.
Right, like the bad idea was apparently like going up against the world's fucking tightest police organization. Holy shit.
And like the coolest town in Italy for so many people this is why I liked this idea. I love the idea of an entire town in on a sting.
No, like it's so good. Like everyone comes off looking like huge bosses. Like the police come off as looking like huge bosses. Whoever they got to do the like fake painting must have like also been like a total badass.
Right.
Like the mayor comes off as cool. Even like the badass like priests that were like so tight and they're like, you know, art history that they were able to spot that it was a fake, but kept their mouths shut. Like everyone just comes off looking as so badass.
Right. Like there's definitely like version, like a straight adaptation where you just like it's the twitters and sort of titters in the town of people is that a new painting? No,
right,
no, it's the same. Wink, wink. And you know, just like the artist like putting it together and just, you know, sort of jumping from like cutting back and forth between the criminals like obviously heading to an iceberg and like the town like quietly getting ready.
And that's my first instinct on how you turn this into a good movie, of just kind of like, they get, however they find out, I don't know if it's a tip-off, I don't know if it's rumors,
right.
But
it's
like...
Right, it's that scene in Blazing Saddles, but like, a movie.
But like, you know, like the police somehow find out that these criminals want to steal this painting, which, what criminals, like that's another bad idea, which criminals are like... My, yeah. We sure want to steal that one very specific painting.
No, there's a story in, like, the undercover officer that infiltrates his way into the art thief world.
Totally,
right.
And, like, gets this tip.
Right, like,
alternatively, there's just, like, that pastor who's, like, in the confession booth just watching this very obvious, like, group of thugs that just keep coming into the church that don't pray there and keep looking at this one piece of art that's, like, not well protected. And he's just like,
I would love the idea of, like, a couple of them, they walk past the confession booth and they... booth and they talk just loudly enough that he can overhear something.
Right.
And he overhears something in the confession booth, but not a confession.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think that puts him in the clear.
Right. Yeah. But he has that moment of like, wait a minute, hang on a second. Am I good?
I think I'm good. Yeah.
Right. I think we're good. Let's go to the police.
Oh, that's funny.
But after the priest, you know, goes to the police, I would love the idea of like, they know that this is going to happen, but they have like a really wide window. Like it's kind of this, like it's going to happen somewhere in the next like 2 to 8 weeks.
Right.
And they don't know. And so it's one of these, like they need to put out the forgery and then like the suspense movies almost like,
is someone going to
exactly.
Yeah. No. How long can they keep up the ruse?
Right.
Right. And so it's kind of like, you know, like you could almost like do it as like a weird, like comedy thriller sort of a thing of like, you know,
because
the police like find out like, oh, and like, you know, this like art historian from Bologna is like coming over and like with a class.
Exactly.
And so then it's like, you know, like go and sabotage that bus. Like, you know, like make that guy get a flat tire or something. Like, you know, he would totally like.
Or like, yeah. And like priests running interference to distract tour groups inside the church so that like the surprise curator from the National Portrait Gallery like
doesn't call them out.
Exactly.
Right. Or they're like, you know, there's like a big like group. There's like that one like nerd in the back that is like looking at it, just
excuse
kinda like,
me.
Like, what is going on here?
Those brushstrokes are not consistent with the artist.
Right. It's like, no, it totally is. It totally is.
Period.
It totally is. Let's move on. And when he's like, no, excuse me, that's when all of a sudden like two goons come out and like that person gets like dragged off towards the back.
That is definitely a tone. Okay.
Yeah, it's a little extreme.
We could go off the original and like, you know, make it like twistier if we wanted to and have like the police be in on it. And it's like actually like, you know, while this fake is up, theoretically going to be stolen, like the original goes missing from the police.
Oh, no,
like,
right.
Something like that. I just really love I don't know, like back in the confession booth, I can imagine like the head of the police is like, you know, detailing his sordid affair while the priest is trying to listen to the criminals outside the booth and like I trying
love
to
that.
Tell them
that, yeah.
Like without
this really heartfelt like repentance story right. And right. Just like, you know, I haven't been at peace with the church for a really long time, but I'm hearing the call to come back and right. Like, just like right. Hold on,
and
just
the priest is like shut up. I'm doing your job for you, client.
Oh, that's really funny. So we have some like really funny scenes, and it seems like the perspective of this story is going to be from multiple vantage points, from, you know, the church, I guess we're sticking with a painting in a church.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
I like it, and why I like it, and why I imagine the criminals liked it is because it just feels like the defenses are low. Like it feels like, you know, all the upside of raiding the Louvre without any of the Louvre security.
So here is my pitch for how you supersize it. For how you kind of like make it even more extreme if we wanted to.
Leans back.
I mean, this is a comedy, so.
And this is really going to like this will turn in probably into like a weird like Guy Ritchie like sort of a situation.
Oh man. Like Snatch, like
yeah, exactly.
Super fast cuts, lots of Cockney accents.
Exactly, something like that. Jason Statham would definitely need to be involved somehow. But yeah, basic same premise. The police find out that there is this plant, steal this painting, switch it out with a fake. The criminals steal the fake. The police have the real one. Or do they? Because it turns out that the criminals had a mole in the police department.
Oh,
and so
shit.
There was a double switch. Or was there? Because it turns out that there was another rival criminal gang that had snuck in like another fake of theirs. And at a certain point, it just kind of gets to the point where like the police, criminals one and criminals two all have a version of the painting. But it has now gotten kind of so convoluted with the switches and the fake outs that no one is quite sure who the original is. And so there's kind of like this like
situation. Spoilers, the priests have the original.
Spoilers, the priests have exactly.
Oh,
that is exactly where I was going with that. But in the meantime, there's kind of this like very highly publicized, like almost, I don't know if it could actually be public or if it will all be happening behind the scenes, but it's kind of this like, they're like flying in all these art experts and
right.
The art experts
and probably
category.
There's like a art expert that like is at the center of this and has to,
right.
You know, make a determination.
Played
and
by Tom Hanks.
Oh,
just tell
no.
Me, tell me the movie it. Doesn't end with Tom Hanks with the actual thing under his arm walking away from the exploding church. Like, I just like...
It's okay, he can buy a new church.
Like, the actual art expert has been, like, the one pulling the strings.
Right.
Or something.
I mean, we've been throwing shade on Dan Brown movies for a hot second, but Ewan McGregor would not be a bad art expert.
He would not be a bad art expert at all. No, I really, really do like this idea of, like, the ones that kind of put the wool over everyone's eyes are, like, the... You know, like the poor Franciscan order of
right.
priests with like their vow of poverty and their vow of, you know.
They're just, you know, trying to like keep culture alive and keep the church vital and like living on those tourist donations.
Totally. Yeah.
So what do you, when you say they're the ones pulling the wool over, like,
so instead of at the end of the movie Tom Hanks walking away with like the painting underneath his, or Ewan McGregor or whoever the art expert
yeah,
is
yeah.
with the painting underneath his elbow as the church explodes, it's more of one of those like, you know, like at the end of the movie everyone is just kind of at the bar just like
you
fuck.
Try to mess with the church, you get messy, like,
or like, you know, just kind of like everyone like
everyone
back at the
is
bar
just
is just like
no
fuck
one,
me nobody
yeah, no,
I guess nobody
no one will
has
ever
that
know.
Stupid
and
thing.
Like
nobody
these
knows.
Things are valuable as copies, but we can't prove the provenance of the original cut to the actual church. It's night fairly quiet and empty, and the kindly I'm casting Brendan Gleeson to deal with it. The kindly priest like reframes something, walks away, and then we see that it is like the actual original of the painting.
Right. Mm. And he's like, yeah, like, you know, don't mess with the church.
Right.
And just because, like, they're the only ones that are not coming at it from this angle of either, like, we want to make a shit ton of money, or not coming at it from this angle of we want to get, like, the prestige of being, right, like, they just the police department. Yeah.
And no, they're, which is, like, seemingly coming at this for, like, the appropriate selfless reasons.
Right. Mm. Which is why I want to make them, like, a Franciscan order, or not just, like, a standard, like, Roman Catholic priest, because the Roman Catholic Church makes a lot of money.
Yes, it does.
But anyway,
but I guess it's not surprising. If we're setting it in Europe, then we are dealing with probably a variation of, like Franciscans or Dominicans or something like
that. Sure. Yeah. But that's the final plot twist. Before that, there's probably...
Well, I'm glad we got that sorted.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of kind of back and forths and a lot of... And sort of like the question is, in my mind, kind of like, when does the movie begin? Because... Right.
Interesting.
One version of it is you begin with the art expert played by Ewan McGregor, like, you know, bring, bring, like, hello. And it's like, we need you to get to this, like, town in Italy. And he gets there and it's sort of this, like, all right, so this is going to be weird. I'm the head of police. This is the head of this, like, mafia family. This is the head of this, like, other mafia family. We're all temporarily calling a truce until you identify which one of these paintings is the right one. And he's like, what the hell is going on here?
Don't worry about it.
And the other version of it is almost like a structure that is more like the Coen brothers Fargo.
Right.
Where the quote-unquote main character doesn't get introduced until you're almost like 40 minutes into the movie.
Which is what I lean towards.
Mm-hmm.
And Frances McDormand would also be an excellent arts expert.
Frances McDormand can do whatever she wants. Yes. Like, there is... no role that I would not be at least passingly interested in seeing Frances McDormand take a crack at.
Right, yeah, because I think, or at least I'm sorry, Zach, I interrupted.
No, that's all right.
No, I was just going to say that, like, I am interested in preserving something of, like, the rug pulling out from under you joy of, like, people heisting something and discovering that, like, it may not be
right.
The thing that they're after.
So I guess the thing that I am interested in sort of just diving into together is, like, who is our protagonist? What motivates them? Mm-hmm. Just like, and like, I guess who, what's the ensemble of characters that we're focused on?
Sure.
And like, what do they want? What do they actually need? Like, just sort of getting into those details.
Totally.
A great thing to do now that you have 17 minutes remaining.
Damn.
So is this like the time. Most
like ahead of the curve we've been on?
Don't count those chickens yet.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. So I think that there need to be at least three factions kind of all vying these things. Okay. Because when it's just like two people or two factions,
the cat and mouse,
it's eventually possible to kind of be like, okay, no, hang on a second.
And you, like, also what have the expectation of, like, one will win, one will lose.
Right.
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 And so, like, when there are three or four, then it feels messier in a way that I think rewards, like, the chaos, the comedic chaos that you guys are going for.
Right. And when I think about, like, Rat Race, like, I feel like there's that frenetic energy of having multiple groups beyond two.
Yeah.
Sort of vying for the same goal.
And I think that it kind of needs to be like the police with, like, a police chief that is probably very interested, not just in preserving the law, but also in, like, you know, like, election is coming up. Like, this was going to be, like, his, like, coup moment of just, like, you know, like, I'm going to pull off this amazing sting operation and everyone is going to love me and I'm going to seem like a total badass and I'm going
to
get elected.
This is someone who clearly has a chip on their shoulder and, like, something to prove. Or, you know, just, like, wants to lord it over everyone in their lives.
Right. Mm. I think that probably criminal faction A is, like, an older, more established, more, like, Corleone-esque, like, old school mafia family. And there might even kind of be in this place of, like, nobody takes us seriously anymore. Like, everybody's kind of always, like, they assume that we're around, but nobody's afraid of us anymore. Like, no, like, when's the last time that we did a proper crime? We need to do a proper crime and, like, remind everyone of, like, how badass we are.
And half of them are, like, watching soccer in the other room. Like, they also sort of need like a big win in order to like get back the respect they feel they deserve.
Totally. And then I think that the other criminal faction then needs to kind of be like the young, like,
punk,
you know,
upstarts.
Punk upstarts. Yeah. Like the oldest one of them is like 22. And this is like their like big coming out party in their mind of like, you know, like, we're going to do this and people
Everyone's
are going to take us seriously.
Everyone's been doing art crime wrong.
Right.
We are going to pull off something that's going to, like, totally change the game.
And you know what it is? And they're like, we're going to steal this thing and then go to, like, the public square and burn it. Like, we're not going to do this for money, man. Like, we're going to, like,
the revolution will not be monetized.
The revolution will not be monetized. And so they're, and like, which I think would be funny to have them kind of be like,
negative monetized.
Right. To have them kind of be like, like, the moment that you confirm that ours is the real one, we're going to go and torch it.
Right.
Like, you know, we're going to go and destroy it. Like, you know, tell me that it's the real thing so that I can burn it already. And I think that, like, into that tripartite hurricane, you bring in our expert art historian, expert on the Dutch masters or whatever.
Sure.
And I think that just, like, professionally, they would probably have a very vested interest in... I want to make sure that...
It belongs in a museum?
Yes. Thank you.
I had to.
You know what? You drive the car now. I mean, you're clearly, like, you know... You have some thoughts?
I'm
sorry. Please.
Let's be clear. I have thoughts about Indiana Jones. and feelings. Thoughts and feelings about Indiana Jones. But it's sort of using that Fargo model, right? Like, they're sort of... the historian, the critic, the whoever they are, has a more grounded and professional outlook.
Yes. But I don't know what like their personal growth is. Like, I don't sort of know what is the thing that they get out of it besides just like, well, that was a weird weekend, man.
I mean, Marge Gunderson doesn't, spoilers for Fargo, doesn't grow like a ton. She confronts chaos and maintains her humanity in the face of it, right? So there may not be like a traditional want need. They may just be our the film's preferred perspective through the chaos.
So I have a wrench to throw into this.
Please, please.
So what
please.
If
wrench away?
What if we leaned in? And no offense to anybody, I don't mean. What if we leaned into the Catholic angle? And this art person,
I like where you're going,
is like the SWAT team art expert from the, like, you just see them like coming up from like level 4,000, like in like the secret dungeon of like, you know,
like he, like they go
like the Catholic
they
Illuminati
take off
establishment.
Like the giant metal Swiss guard helmet to like put on a suit.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like they and get like, a call and it's like 30 minutes of the movie. They're just coming up from the elevator.
Right. Like his key card like, goes to the floor in the Louvre where they keep the real Mona Lisa.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. and there's like a secret channel to like Italy, like Rome, where they like get to the Louvre. Yeah, I'm just imagining that like character who is as much of a you're pointing
really,
your finger.
I
go,
really
go
really
this,
fucking
this.
Like this. no, you turn it into Clint Eastwood at the start of in Fistful of Dollars,
right?
Where like he gets like, you know, the Catholic Church, like he's an agent of the church, and they sort of tell him like, you know, you need to go in there and like steal this painting back for us
by
like,
any means
by
necessary.
By any means necessary.
There are now three of them, and so which one does he steal?
Right.
And he's be sure.
And he's posing as like, you know, like I'm just an art historian, and like, you know, like I'm just here
right,
to help.
But
you
art
guys.
Historians don't pack guns that big.
Totally. Yeah, he's definitely not played by Jason Statham.
Oh, 100%. And that gives away the twist. It's unfortunate. Although, like, people would be like, hey, this is a different kind of role for Jason Statham. Maybe he's doing something interesting. Oh, no.
No, see, I like the movie, though, where, like, he is still played by Tom Hanks.
And he's
going through this.
And Tom Hanks could
don't
kill
tell
at
me.
That.
No, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
In an hour and 20 minutes into the movie, all of a sudden it's like, did your accent just change? And he's like, I don't know. Did it? Takes off mask and it's Jason Statham underneath. And it's been Jason Statham the entire time.
You just pull. What was that franchise from? They just did it like constantly. Like it was like every scene. Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible had like the third movie had someone's ass pulled.
Yeah, literally like every other scene was like, but now you think it's me, it's somebody else.
Right. It's like, man, like Philip Seymour Hoffman sure was evil, I think. Like, I'm not sure.
Some John Woo doves float by in the background.
No, but like, I love that wrench sack of kind of like, no. This is someone that is going to be masking as a impartial arbiter.
Actually, that no one is what they seem at all.
Yeah. Like, they are going to have a very, very, which is why, and that makes me love it even more, that like, at the end of the day, it's the penniless friar order, the ones that actually outfox everyone else. Like, I just love that even more.
Feeling a little Baby Driver vibes.
Like,
everybody's kind of a bad guy, but you love that they're, like, just these character. I don't know. Like, they're just, there's not, like, necessarily, I mean, obviously, Baby Driver himself, but, like, I just feel like if you make the person who's fighting on behalf of the church be, like, a ruthless person, it's not obvious that there's just, like, one sort of, like, sacred group that you're rooting for. Like, you're just kind of in it for the fight. I don't know if that...
No, I think that tracks. And I would
Sarah,
also...
Sarah has some pause, though. I'm curious what you're thinking.
Oh, no. Okay. That
could
was,
be me projecting.
That was me zoning out because I need more caffeine in my life right now.
Nice. I can relate to that.
I was going to say that, like, I would want to, like, really, really muddy the waters of, like, you know, maybe, like, the, obviously, the police is at least on some level sympathizable because they're the police. Like, you don't steal shit. But, like, man, like, that police chief sure is in it for the wrong reasons. And, like, he's a bag of ego. And then, like, you know, like, the Corleone-esque established criminals, it's like, okay, sure, they're criminals, but, like, they're pillars of the community, and they're talking about, like, we've got, like, this buyer that is going to, like, buy it for all this money, and we're interested in, like, pumping it into the community, and we're going to start, like, a new center, and, like, you know, there's going to be jobs, and, like, honestly, like, us stealing this painting is going to be the best thing that has happened to this, like, little town, like, in forever. And then, like,
we're redistributing the wealth.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a public service.
Yeah, it's like, look at the realpolitik of the situation. All of a sudden, they became more French. But, and then maybe, like, the young upstarts, there's kind of this, like, for too long, we've been worshipful of these sacred cows, and we want to kind of, like, you know, send the message.
The things that these things represent are wrong.
Right.
And, yeah.
And only from the ashes can we rebuild.
Right. And sort of like the kind of goofy, affable person in the center of it, you secretly know that they are working for, like, you know, this, like, huge organization that was like, hey, so this, like, little town, they've got this, like, tiny little gem that is the only reason why anybody goes to visit that town. Get it back here. Like, you know, like, it needs to be in our vault. Where are the fake paintings coming from? Like, who is making these?
I like the idea of a goofy art student that gets, like, roped into this.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or, like, maybe it's more than one person. Like,
that was my thought, is that they're coming from different sources.
Sure.
That, you know, maybe the punk criminal collective has a dope 3D printer. and, like, the old school criminal enterprise, like, one of their big enforcers, like, huge imposing dude, is also a great painter who studied the Dutch masters. And, like, you know, the police commissioner's nephew is a goofy art student or something like that. Like, so it expands sort of, like, the cast of personalities if you have more sources, but then also you have to deal with all of those sources, so I don't know if you want to streamline it or something.
How many fakes do we need?
At least two. Okay.
At least two.
I feel like I like the goofy, like, sort of younger character to be the, like, computer program. Like, I love your idea of, like, a 3D printer. Like, there's just, like, the technical, like, they have a scan of it or a photo and they reproduce it with, like, some kind of robot. And then I feel like having a more, like, kind of conventional art, like, art reproducer painter character that's, like, you know, kind of like the Geppetto.
5 minutes, by the way.
The painting Geppetto in the neighborhood. That's just like, oh, okay, I'll do this for you.
Yeah, probably because like his family is like in the other room, like about to be fed to a tank of piranhas. If he doesn't do it for them. Yeah, cool. No, but I like that there is now sort of this, like, you know, like new science versus old master dynamic in it too.
And like, I feel like the new science person, Cowboy Bebop's Ed, that like kind of quirky, like, yeah, I don't know how you characterize Ed.
Just like Agent of Chaos.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there would probably be a lot of like, the main character kind of comes into town and everyone is kind of like, you know, all right, like identify which of these is the real one. And he's kind of like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like,
and these the main character time. Is Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Rips face off. I'm Jason Statham.
Tom Hanks and or Jason Statham is the main character. And then, you know, like as he is, he's sort of like delaying this, the sort of like announcement of which one is real. And he's probably like having to go from faction to faction as to like look at the paintings and compare them. And he's taking photos and kind of like, I need to go back and I need to look at it again.
And sort of Fistful of Dollars style.
Are playing they like, them against each other. Yeah.
Like that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Of like, he's sort of like starting to kind of plant seeds here and there and like kind of like, you know, trying to play the groups against each other. Trying to just kind of like sow chaos so that when he finally identifies which one the real is, he can just kind of like light the powder keg and escape in the chaos. I think that would probably be like the bulk of the movie, of just like him starting to kind of manipulate the factions into being more overtly at war with one another.
So how does since we only have like 3 minutes, how do things end for all of our factions?
What a good question, Sarah. I will tell you as soon as I am.
You have business to attend to with that cup.
Another sip of tea. Yeah, yes.
I'm wondering if the way out is through, and like how is he playing people? Like what are we watching when he's playing people off of each other?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that resolve? Like I think that's ultimately the question is how does it resolve? But I think how it resolves is sort of like the dominoes that get us there.
Right.
And I know there's a certain extent of like you engineer the dominoes to get you to where you want to go, but I feel like we've like, yeah, loaded the
2 minutes, by the way.
How does it explode?
A couple of possibilities.
Okay.
One is just like straight up violence. Like he, like, you know, like Tom Hanks engineers it so that like one of the anarcho punks thinks that he has blanks in his gun because like, you know, like everybody needs a gun because like, you know, you need to look tough, but like, you know, we don't load our guns with actual bullets. That'd be stupid. And Tom Hanks is like, switches like the blanks for actual bullets. And so engineers so that like one of the anarcho kids actually shoots one of like Mr. Corleone's sons. And so then all of a sudden, like, oh, it's on, because now we're having just like an actual shootout instead of kind of this like art based detente, slow cold war. And then the police need to get involved. And in the middle of that, Tom Hanks can kind of, you know, break into whoever vault he's identified as being the correct one, right, and abscond with the painting. So like, that's one possibility.
Okay.
I don't know what the other ones are.
I have another one.
Please.
The entire movie, there's this like shadowy figure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed that Tom Hanks is the shadowy figure later.
Okay, sure.
But the whole time it's like, you know, like he's just this sort of sweetly person that's just trying to be like Switzerland in the middle of all this. And like, you know, you see the like bullets getting switched out and you don't know who it is. And sure, it's just like there's this like sort of like agent of chaos in the background. Right. And then
in that scenario, you probably wouldn't know that our kindly art historian is an agent of.
Right.
No, that's the version that opens with Jason Statham getting sent out by the Vatican and then cut to Tom Hanks arriving as like professor, whatever from like the University of Oxford.
Right. But you don't necessarily see Jason Statham's face. You may just hear like yes, voice changer, like I'm on it.
Right.
And so I think like,
That was time, but finish your thought.
I was just going to say, we sort of end with everybody on fire except for him walking out with the painting under his arm away from
the wrong painting.
But it's the wrong painting, yeah. Because Brendan Gleeson has outsmarted all of them.
That's right.
Yeah. Guys, that was just a ton of fun. Well done, both of you. That was great.
Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you for this idea. What a gem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's real.
Police of Italy. Jesus. Yes.
Wow. BBC News Service.
Actually, and the BBC News Service.
Yeah. All right. Well, stick around. We'll be back for more Insanity right after this.
All right, everyone, stopping the show for just a moment because we have breaking news. We just released a full online course all about audio storytelling today. We're super proud of it. It's called Audio Fiction 101, and it's got basically everything that we think about when we think about storytelling and about creating great stories in audio in it, how to build great radio characters, how to world build in audio, how to do setting effectively, all kinds of cool things. So if you are interested in such things, if you're interested in writing and creativity and storytelling, then head over to audiofiction101.com. That's audiofiction, the numbers, 101.com. to check it out. We would really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll just get right back to the show.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to the second half of the show where we talk about life, updates, creativity.
It's very structured. It is.
in fact, as checking in with friends always is.
In fact, there's an agenda. That you have all downloaded the PDF that shows you the 12-step process of the back half, because if you don't have that guide, this is honestly, sorry, I can't even continue with this joke. It is very, very deeply untrue.
It's like, what is the shape of this structure? Is it a pyramid? Is it a scheme?
It's actually a dodecahedron.
I see.
Ah. Yeah,
yes. No, but what are we talking about this week, Zach?
Well, I figured this would be a good week for an update. It's been a while since we've shared what we're working on in any depth. And I feel like this week in particular, the idea of wrapping things up feels palpable as we are wrapping up a online course we've been working on, the three of us, for 3 months now.
Four months now.
Yeah.
I guess four plus if you count the many years ago sitting at Whole Foods writing out index cards for what we should cover.
Right. I would say that this is about probably like version three of us thinking about doing
three
an online
or four
course.
Yeah.
The first couple of ones were abortive. And then I think that there were like a couple of months of kind of prep last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of December to now has kind of been very much like
concerted work,
all
living
hands
in
on deck.
Zach's
right.
basement.
And as we record this on Saturday, what percentage would you guys say that we are done with the course? Are we 95% done plus?
I would say we're at like 96. Like 96? We are, all of the content is locked more or less, except for a couple very minor edits. We are writing, we need to review some of the like PDFs and materials that go with the videos and like do all of the admin logistical work of getting it up.
Sure.
And time is weird right now, y'all.
I feel that.
Well, we're all on so much sleep and so well rested.
Yes, we are, one, so well rested. We take great care of ourselves. This is excellent.
Oh, man. Well, it's just like doing, like creating a course on top of other freelance work too. Like, I don't know what day it is.
No, I left your place on Friday, or which was yesterday. I meant to say I left your place at 5 when we broke, and then like I went and did 4 hours of my regular job.
Oh man,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's a grind to like have. Like, because we've been throwing so much energy into this, and we always do. You think we would learn, but no. It always just, and it's so rewarding and so energizing, but also like so consuming to be working on a creative project like this, and then having to tend to the rest of your life, just like dementors all of that energy away. Oh,
man. Well, and I think that we've just kind of had, a mentality with this online course of this is going to be like one big push and then it'll be done and it's going to be amazing. And I think that the big push ended up being a multi-month push, and we just kind of never recalibrated kind of our expectations.
Remember when this was going to drop on January 1st?
Oh, I remember when it was. I would remember when it was going to drop before that.
Oh, that's right. Was it going to be part of the Christmas?
The original ambition was Christmas.
Oh, Lord.
And
if we had shot it on an iPhone in front of my bookshelf, that would have been
reading notes that
doable.
Were in front of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's not. It's turned out to be, it involves a lot of animation and a lot of effects, involves kind of a lot of assets that we had to gather, involved sometimes even like writing out and acting out partial scenes from non-existent audio dramas to like illustrate concepts.
Yeah, y'all shot some B-roll yesterday was it 2 days ago?
Time is a lie.
It was 2 days ago.
I think it was around the eye in Jeremy Baramee was when we shot that.
No, but like for real though, ends of projects for me feels like seeing the time knife.
if you're a little bit confused right now, you should
Thank
watch
you,
The Good
Gabrielle,
Place.
It is
a fantastic show that has a lot of really dorky jokes about time, and it's amazing.
It's a wonderful show.
Jeremy.
But no, something that we were talking about earlier, to your point about time feeling very weird around the end of things, is that, and I know that I had this every time that I was kind of in like the last 2 days before an episode of Wolf 359 came out, when I was doing kind of the editing and the mixing.
Right.
Of when you run into a problem there, or not even a problem, like sometimes just a speed bump, just kind of one of those things of like, I thought that was going to take 15 minutes. It's going to take 3 hours. Not because there's anything wrong, but just because
that's what it'll take.
That's what it'll take. Because you're so close to being done. And because I think like, part of our brains is already kind of simulating the life where we are done with this already.
Right.
When all of a sudden, like, it's like, oh, no, hang on a second. The present asserts itself and we're still trapped there and we need to do something. It's way more like, what? Where's my table? I need to flip it right now. Ah, how dare there be a delay? How dare there be a speed bump? What is wrong with the world? Whereas when you're kind of in the middle of it, and it's all turbulence and it's all speed bumps, and you're kind of like, I have no idea how long any of this is going to take. It's so much easier to kind of deal with all these
things.
Yeah,
you've also factored it into your life for like the foreseeable future.
Yes.
To your point, you're already imagining your life after the thing is done. And it, you know, could be a thing that you are incredibly excited about and incredibly proud of or you know, whatever, but you are ready to let it go.
Yes, absolutely.
Well before you actually have to. And especially for, you know, editing episodes for you, and I think all of this logistical work for all of us is stuff that needs to happen, but is not why we wanted to do the thing.
Right.
Yes. Right? Like, I did not want to, you know, migrate content onto a new hosting platform. Like, that's not why I got into this game.
Really? Because that's what I live for. That's
my jam. We're different and complementary strengths. That's why we work so well together.
That's funny.
Spoilers, that is not my jam, and Sarah and I are very alike.
Yes.
Let me hit the translate button. And, you know, for any no bad ideas long time listeners, you might remember that when we were doing this show in November, there was a lot of kind of oh, what are we working on? How's the project going? How's this going? And we kind of stopped doing that around December because all of a sudden it turned into like, so what are we doing? Still the course. Like,
yeah, we're still the same thing.
Just working on the course. And we are kind of now finally getting to the point where like it feels that since it's finally over, we have kind of a like,
there are other projects that we can get back to or start.
That's right. I can go back to that manuscript for a novel that I've been horribly neglecting.
You haven't been horribly neglecting.
I've been it's one of those like I've been checking in on it, but I definitely haven't been like, you know, like
I know, I know, right. But
you left the dog in the car, but there's like the window's cracked open. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm just like, your horrible neglecting is like not killing yourself by overworking and just like bad. I don't know. I feel like you're still thinking about like, it. It's still cooking on the back burner.
My kid is fine, but it is not like, you know, being taken to the dentist on like the exact day when it would
be best. You've had
for
to push the appointment
dentist, that kind
times.
Of thing. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Right. And I mean, we all have things. I have a pilot script that in theory was going to get written in March. We'll see if it actually does.
Mm-hmm. We got time.
So much time.
Time for days.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've been, I made the great choice to not only work on the course that we set out to work on, but actually a couple weeks before we decided to do that, I had committed to doing another online course with a friend from a former job that we actually all worked at, which put the idea of making online courses in our head, working at 1 month, the online education company. But one of the teachers that I connected with from 1 month wanted to collaborate on a cold email course together, sort of as a test run. And then on top of that, one of my freelance clients hired me to edit a technical coding course. So all
your
of a sudden,
course on course
yeah,
right now.
All of a sudden, my entire life was like very similar kinds of work.
Yeah.
And
that's rough.
Three times of, yeah, I wouldn't say any one of these was a full-time job, but at various points, each one of them asserted itself as like needing that much time.
Totally.
But the other two didn't go away. And so
what do you think is more stressful, managing like different jobs, different responsibilities, or managing projects at different stages in their completion?
What was the first one?
Like managing different projects, like, you
like
know,
very different kinds of things,
or not necessarily just like, you know, you're working on three things that are very similar to each other. I completely understand how that can be frustrating because you don't get to exercise, like you're straining the same muscles. But like, is that what stresses you out more, doing that sort of thing or like working on things that are all in different stages of doneness, and like having to be frustrated with something that like won't start while something that you want to finish is taking forever to finish, or you know, that sort of thing.
Right. So I think it was much more that for this, because also on top of that, I was producing live streams for this Jewish group, community group, and also doing a podcast for a tech company. So there was diversity. I think it was just volume this time around, and they were all in different stages. So like there was that like, oh, I can like take a break from editing. Like it would have been nice to be like, I'm taking a break from editing to do some on camera stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's a nice break. I think the problem was, it was like, I need to be editing and on camera at the same time. And so like, okay, I need to like hire somebody to take care of editing while I'm doing, and then just like manage. So I think I just hit a new maximum for my bandwidth, and it wasn't always pretty. I feel like I'm able to laugh about it now in a way that I did not have as much laughter in January.
Right.
But I definitely see a light at the end of the tunnel.
No, and I think that there's a little bit of that dynamic of like when you're working on things that are in different stages of development, and when they're all very different, there can be a dynamic of, oh, like doing thing two as like a break from thing one because they're so different, and I can kind of come back at thing one refreshed and vigorous because I spent, you know, I spent Tuesday doing thing two. Except when you kind of get to that point where you're like, oh my God, no, like this all needs to be done either because I'm behind schedule or just because I'm spent. And then it's just like nothing is a break from everything else. Everything instead kind of turns into like that thing that is stopping you from working on the everything else. And you just start to get like madder right. and madder at everything.
And like the one essential deadline turns into three essential deadlines and they're all taking away from each other.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Human brains are fun, you guys. Yeah. Emotions are.
That's a word.
Just a blast. But how are you guys feeling about this course that is almost done? That we're now kind of in like the very, very last bit of tunnel before the light. Like, are you feeling good? Are you feeling excited?
There's so many feelings.
Are you feeling anything at all?
Well, so beyond the exhaustion, there is a very, very palpable sense of excitement and a non-zero amount of terror. The excitement is I'm just proud of what we've made.
Yeah.
The terror is I'm about to send like my child to its first day of school, which is it being taken by people that may have criticism and may have, you know, and that's just like,
and you can know that
you're par for the course.
You can know how awesome your child is and still have that ping of like, oh my God, but like,
is it going to fit in? Are they going to like it?
Yeah, I know it's great.
Is it going to have a hard time?
Right.
And yeah, you know, I just think that there's like a lot of moving parts to making something like this work, from like the few sound imperfections of like a roommate walking above the head. Cause like the studio is my room is our, you know,
right.
office is my, you know, where I sleep also. And so, you know, there's like that reality. And then there's like, there's also like the new ideas that are popping into my head because we made the course and because I've had to think about storytelling and just like the caliber of ideas that are coming up is really exciting. And then it's like, all right, like, can we get the course done so I can execute on some of these ideas? And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of emotion, I think, is and some conflicting. How about for you, Sarah?
Dead inside. I think it changes, man. I think that's part of what's so difficult about any sort of long-term project, whether it's creative or otherwise, is that, like, you know, you go through this roller coaster seesaw tilt-a-whirl of being incredibly proud of it and, you know, being excited for it to be out in the world, being very terrified, like thinking that what you've done doesn't necessarily measure up to your standards for it, not even being sure anymore because you've been living with it for so long and like wanting to push it away. And then, ah, no, but see, that animation's really cool. Like, and so like I am now somewhat used to, although like intellectually used to, emotionally I still feel all the things.
Yeah.
But like intellectually used to, like, I'm just going to go through waves and cycles with projects as I work on them. And there are like clear points where I am very low, and then there are clear points where I'm very high, and like they just flow.
Right. Well said.
Yeah. Very good.
What about you, Gabrielle?
I think that I'm a little bit, I'm kind of in my end game cycle myself, which is kind of alternating between stages of kind of deep, like, chest clenching anxiety and kind of a sense of like, you know, I think that calling it zen would be generous,
sure,
but like just acceptance of the process being almost over. Like, for example, like today, like right now while you were talking, Sarah, all of a sudden like something shifted in my brain, and all of a sudden I was just kind of like, oh my God, like we still have so much that we need to do today. And like, you know, like, yeah. There's like, and like, we really want to get this time. And like, you know, my God, like we should be like doing this thing. And like, we're all so tired, and like, we're going to miss something. And then what about the things that like, we're just not going to fix? Because like, for example, there's two videos that I shot that when we got to the end of, you know, importing them and then editing them and then animating it, all of a sudden we kind of went like, oh my God, there's some weird sound problems with these. Not to the point that you can't understand what is happening, but there's definitely like some,
but it's
like,
not perfect.
But it's not perfect. And then we kind of look at each other, we're like, so are we gonna, you know, this is all happening like this past week, like when, like pretty close to the end of the process. And we're kind of looking at each other going like, so do we re-record this and then re-import and then re-edit and then reanimate? And the answer is no, we don't. We kind of choose to live with it. And right now I am kind of in the anxiety part of choosing to live with it and choosing to kind of be like, oh my God, people are going to look at this and they're going to, like, you know, like their ears are going to reject this and it's going to be terrible. Nobody's going to like me and I'm going to have to like move to an island where I'm going to starve because I don't know how to fish. Oh my God. Like, is this terrible? And I think in like about 20 minutes, I'm going to just kind of be in a place of like, it is what it is and it is going to be fine. And it is not perfect. And we are not pretending that we are, you know, a world-class studio with all the resources ever. We are three people trying to share some thoughts that we think are useful from a basement in Brooklyn. And given that context, I am incredibly proud of the thing that we've done, warts and all. And I think that, like, the warts are part of what makes it us and part of what makes it this new thing that we are doing for 2019 and part of what makes me love it so much. And I think that that is just a cycle that is going to continue until the thing itself is released. And then we'll go on to whatever the next thing is.
I think so much of the end of something, of you know, sort of working your way towards that finish line, is that you have to sort of have this, like, mental wrestling match of the thing no longer being in your head or being, you know, sort of in the pot, but being out in the world. And that's a little bit like, you know, taking a child to school, but also just like an internal process for yourself.
Oh yeah.
Of just sharing is hard.
Yeah, it's just the surrender of letting go.
Exactly.
Of the control and risking being rejected in some way, creatively, which is always super fun and not terrifying at all.
But totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, yeah.
Yep. But you kind of remind yourself that it is just a cycle and that all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again. And you take a deep breath and then you let it go.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.